Start this or what?
No.
I mean, I could start, but it's not my show.
Actually, we let Kipley start last time.
Yeah, like, no. She just went into
yeah.
it.
That was pretty good. Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien, and we have a special guest today, Jin Bum. Kapla. She is also known. Kapla Bakje. She's also known as the Klingon Pop Warrior. And she's done songs. You've got, what, 2 EPs now?
I do.
And it's absolutely amazing.
That's so cool.
So going back, before I let you talk, I'm being horribly rude, but Aaron actually showed me your video, Hitch Up, like a year ago.
Yeah, so
I don't know where you found it, but I was amazed.
One of those YouTube things, and you know, you're just watching YouTube, and that came on, and I was like, "This is amazing! It's hilarious! It's fun! It's smart!" Because I don't know how the heck you know somebody translated everything into Klingon. You know, it was really cool. You know, but it's like I just watched it and had this biggest grin on my face the whole time. Like, what the heck? This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. It's awesome. and then you know, me and Dave were doing the podcast, and I showed him this, and he was like, "That's crazy."
I was like, "It's crazy, but it's awesome." I was like, "Ah."
And that's older than
that was
a year, isn't it?
The general response of the internet, though. I mean, I am still amazed when I go and I look at that video. It has something like 180 some odd thousand views now.
That's awesome.
And it's been like 3 or 4 years. But the comments on it are overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah.
And it has like well over 1,000 thumbs up, I think close to 1,200, maybe more, and only like 50 to 60 thumbs down.
Yeah, well, like, who are those people?
The internet
people?
Doesn't like anything that much. It's so weird. Yeah, it's so weird.
I mean, it is weird that, I mean, well, it's not weird that people like it. It's weird the people who dislike it. Like, who goes like, "What is this? Nah, this isn't the song I thought it was going to be."
Well, that's, you know? that's what I don't get. Like, you know, when you see something about Star Trek, you get all these like negative comments, and I'm like, "What happened to the Star Trek fans?" Idic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Right. But
it was done with such good humor. I don't understand when people hate on it. I mean, that's just me personally. And it's the same thing with my albums, you know, and the live performances and stuff like that. Like, I have a total sense of humor about this. You know, it's ridiculous on so many levels.
But it's
so much fun.
It comes through the humor side of it. Now, was that when you did that song, Hitch Hop, was that the first time you've done that, or were you doing that before and then you did the video?
That was the first time. So that video was done, and it's actually on the improvised Star Trek. There's the improvised Star Trek podcast.
Okay.
And they are fantastic. They're a local Chicago improv troupe, but they have this amazing podcast that gets listened to everywhere.
I've heard it actually before. It's pretty good.
They are absolutely nuts. It's like if The Office were set on a Federation starship. Yeah, yeah. They're the most inept starship crew. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And so they had this episode. It's the episode 59. It's called "Today is a Good Day to Cry." And they get their episode title suggestions from fans. They ask for them usually on Saturdays.
That's awesome.
On social media, they put out a call to send in their, you know, send in suggestions for episode titles. So it was "Today is a Good Day to Cry." And I could give you the basic premise, but what really ends up happening is by the end of the episode, they actually needed to have "Sixpence None the Richer's Kiss Me" translated into Klingon, because that song was playing, and then one of the characters goes, "Computer, translate to Klingon, or play in the original Klingon, or so, or something to that effect." And then it switches over, and it's Kitchope instead. And so, and it was because one of the improvisers had this like extreme moment of specificity about that song in the course of the improvisation.
Wow.
And so they went and picked up their copies of the Klingon dictionary for post-production and were going to translate it. And they were like, whoa, we are in way over our heads. And so, but at that point, this was like 2013, and the theater company, there was a theater company in Chicago that was doing, had been doing a show called A Klingon Christmas Carol for a few years at that point. And so they got in touch with the Klingon Christmas Carol folks and said, "Hey, do you have the resources potentially to help us out and get this song translated?" And they said, "Sure." So they got the song translated for them, and then they were just going to take the translation and, you know, sing it to a crappy karaoke track or whatever and throw it in there. And they got the copy of the lyrics and they were like, whoa, we're still way, way over our heads right now. And so they went back and said, "Hey, do you have somebody who could sing this?" And my friend Chris, who was the artistic director for the theater company, said, "Yes, actually, I do. You should talk to Jen, and she's a singer and she's done the show for a couple of years. So she has the Klingon pronunciation down." Gosh. And so they got in touch with me. And I said, "Oh, yeah, I would love to do that." And so I went in and, you know, we recorded the song, and it was just supposed to be backing. It was just supposed to be that little backing track just for the podcast.
Wow.
When we finished recording it, we were sitting around, and I don't remember who it was. It was me and Nick Wagner and Christopher Rathjen. They were the two guys from Improvised Star Trek, and they are such brilliant improvisers and such funny guys. And they do video production and sound production. And so I don't remember which of us said, "We should make a music video, herp, derp, derp," you know? And then, you know, and everybody's eyes kind of lit up and we're like, "We should make a music video."
Yeah, totally.
And when we put it out there, I went back a couple weeks later and I jumped around in front of a green screen, and, you know, and then they edited all of that together.
Right.
And through, you know, we threw it up online figuring, you know, fans of the podcast might watch it and our friends and family would see it and laugh. And it kind of blew up. Within 24, 48 hours, it had 100,000 views. We had gotten picked up by the Mary Sue, MTV Geek, TeamCoco.com, Conan O'Brien's website had picked us up. It went crazy. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And people liked it. Like, even then, all the comments were really positive and everything was just, the feedback coming back was really positive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're like, we should do more of these. Like, but that wasn't really, we were all so busy, it kind of got away from us. But that was the first thing that kind of got me thinking, hey, this was really fun. I could do more of this. And then about a year later, I had sort of collected songs from other people within the Klingon language community who were like, "I've got this song."
Wow. And who knew that was like a subculture to translate songs into Klingon? So that's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, it's a good language exercise for people who are playing with the language.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of those things where they just sort of had them in their back pockets, and it was stuff that they had, you know, worked on just for themselves or as a kind of, you know, as just an exercise, a language exercise.
Yeah.
And most of people who had them, they'd had them for a while, but they went back and kind of reworked them and made sure they were still accurate or up to date. Like if we had gotten new words, that they were able to update things. And yeah, once I had four, I was looking to have four songs to record an EP. And once I got the fourth song, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to do a Kickstarter and try to produce a CD and see what happens.
That's wonderful.
And that was the first CD had six songs on it by the time it was done. So,
well, and so you said before the song was actually was made, you were doing the Klingon Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you, okay, yeah, so you gotta tell us the backstory of that, because like, you know, obviously you can sing, so you'd like to perform, but where did the Klingon side come in? You gotta fill in those blanks.
Yeah, so A Klingon Christmas Carol is a play that was produced by a theater company originally called Commedia Beauregard. They they started up in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities. And I had lived up there after college for a number of years and then moved back home to Chicago. And they had Commedia Beauregard specialized, like their mission was to produce translated works.
Okay.
And as a joke, they decided for a fundraiser, a holiday fundraiser show.
Okay.
They would do a little like one act version of A Christmas Carol and have it translated into Klingon.
Gotcha.
And so they did this little thing and it was like a 35, maybe like a 45 minute show. And they did, so they created the initial base of the show and it sold out. It was hugely popular. So they decided to bring it back again the next year and the next year. Wow. And each year they started adding more to it. And then I had moved back to Chicago and I got a call from my friend Chris, who was their artistic director. He says, "Hey, we're moving to Chicago. And you know, can we come stay with you while we apartment hunt?" And I said, "Sure." So while we're all hanging out, he's like, "So we're thinking about bringing A Klingon Christmas Carol here to Chicago." And I wasn't that into Star Trek, but it was such a popular show in the Twin Cities. And I'm like, man, I would love to be a part of something like that. What a unique experience.
Right.
And as an actor, just, I have a background in theater. I have a degree in theater. And so I'm just like, man, that would be really fun, I bet. And so he goes, "Well, are you allergic to latex?" And I said, "Not that I know of."
We're going to find out.
We're
going to
be putting it on your face.
Right. Yeah. And he goes, "Well, let's show up for the audition and we'll see what happens." And I went to the audition and I did well with the language. And I'm not very good with fight choreography, but I didn't need to be great. I got cast in the show and, did it that first year, and it was such a fellowship with that show. It was really different from other shows that I've done. In a lot of shows, when you do theater, you kind of become a little family. You're rehearsing 5, 6, 7 days a week leading up to a production, yeah. And then you're in the show, and it's, you know, sometimes it's a really emotional piece, and so you're kind of leaving it all out there and putting it all out on stage every night,
right?
And so you really come to trust the people around you, and so it was even more so with this show because we weren't even speaking English.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
all starting from the same place. You know, it's, there was no, everybody was on very even ground with that show. And it was such a unique and fun bonding experience. And a lot of people came back here, you know, the next year. And then even the year after that, I decided I wanted my holidays back.
And, you decided like, that's enough. I want to have Christmas like, once in a while.
I want to have a Christmas. I didn't want to stress out around Christmas. We hadn't gone to visit my in-laws in a while, and so I was like, I need a Christmas to myself.
You know, it's bad when you feel that you need to go see your in-laws. You're like, man,
great. so, but like, yeah, it was really like a neat experience. And so from doing that show, I started watching Klingon episodes, and I started getting into. We started watching the show and then I just kind of fell in love with the Klingons from doing that show. And then I fell in love with Star Trek and here I am 7 years later.
You poor woman. It was all going so well.
And then Star Trek happened.
Yeah.
It became our new addiction.
Like a freight train. Just couldn't look away.
What part did you play in the Klingon Christmas Carol?
I was Emle, who is Mrs. Cratchit.
Okay.
And a lot of times we were doubled up on roles. The only person I think who didn't play more than one role was Scrooge. Because he was on stage the whole time.
Yeah. Right.
The actors who have played Scrooge over the years are just phenomenal. I just you can't be a slouch on stage. And the guys that I've worked with they're just absolutely fantastic. Been really fun to see the show change and grow. But yeah, I was Vaughn, the sister,
okay.
And Scrooge's sister in one of the like flashback past scenes. And one year I was, what's it called? Like the Hutch Koiwit or something like that. They were like in the opening of the show, you see people like knocking on his door and saying, "Would you give money to the poorhouse, or, you know, to the for the orphans and stuff like that. And he's like, well, aren't there any more poorhouses?
Right, right.
In this one, he's like, you know, well, aren't our don't we have our prisons? Is Rua Pente closed down? Like,
what was Tiny Tim called?
Tim Holm. Holm is a noun. It goes on nouns. It's a diminutive, so it makes the noun that it's on less significant or smaller or less. Gotcha. So
that's
so
awesome.
If he were Tim Ah, he would be like Important Tim or Big Tim, and you know, but he's Tim Holm. So,
but he was important. He was going to die without that money.
Well, okay, that's true. But so here's the thing: is like, did you have any language background before getting into Klingon? Did you study any languages, like seriously, other than maybe take a course or two in college?
Yeah, you know, I didn't even take any languages in college, but I did take a couple of years of Spanish in high school.
Right.
I'm always amazed, actually, how much of it sticks with me when I need it. Mm. But I never was super into languages, but I did take classical voice when I was in high school.
Okay.
And I took voice lessons and stuff like that. And so I was singing arias, and I was singing in almost every other language except English.
Gotcha.
And doing choir and voice lessons and stuff like that. And at one point I had considered studying opera and going into vocal performance for college. And so I've always sort of been around. I'd always kind of been around just the idea of languages. And what was so fascinating about doing a Klingon Christmas Carol was it was kind of like doing a spoken opera in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
While opera singers are fluent in every language that they end up singing in. And so you have to learn enough of your songs and understand what you're singing enough to bring that out. And we did that with our bodies. The first year we actually got compared to Kabuki a couple times.
Oh, wow.
Some of it was because of the way the costumes were designed, but I think some of it too kind of had to do with the fact that we were a little bit broader and grander with our gestures to really help the audience. We had super titles so people knew what we were saying.
So that's cool that they weren't like, well, this is people just talking crazy languages dressed as Klingon.
Yeah, it was all super titled. So everybody knew what we were saying and stuff like that. But we were still using our bodies a lot and gesturing a lot to really kind of help add and display what words, you know, we were speaking in the moment. You know, so if you were saying your heart and you kind of tapped your chest or, you know, things like that.
Right. Right.
And it's sort of we use gesture a lot. And I think that's kind of why it was a really interesting experience. And it was interesting to watch people who had been in the show for almost 5 years and see them do scenes, you know, and they were people who we'd all been there at the beginning. And then 5 years later, they know the show so well that they were really acting. Hmm. Like, it was beautiful to watch. I remember watching the scene where Tim Holm has it's Mr. and Mrs. Cratchit, and they're talking about the fact that he's not going to be able to go through he's not going to survive his Age of Ascension ritual.
Sticks will be the end of Tim Holm.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's like, and she's so upset about it, and, you know, and what can she do? And it was such a beautiful moment on stage. And then during it was the ghost of Kalis. So it was Kalis past, present, and future. And during the during Kayla's future, she's holding a tiny Batleth. And when you see the little puppet, he has a little Batleth as a crutch. And so she's holding this little Batleth and she does this death howl. And like it's gut wrenching. It was one of the most gut wrenching things I've ever seen. And it was in Klingon. And it was both utterly ridiculous and completely beautiful to watch. I was excited to get to see that moment because for the first couple of years I was doing it.
Yeah.
And my goal was to kind of both scare people with that scream and like just rip their hearts out and like stomp on them with just standing there in place. And it worked. Every once in a while, I would hear somebody in the audience kind of go.
It sounds like a true Klingon motive. Yeah. You know. Well, that's fascinating because just to know that there was something out there called, you know,
Klingon like, Christmas. And they also did the Klingon Hamlet at the same theater, right?
No, you know what? It's that group did. If you've seen the like Blu-ray special features that talk about Klingon and Shakespeare, I think I can't remember what it was on. It might have been on like part of the movies or something like that.
It was
that.
On
like,
one of the movie Blu-rays because I remember seeing – I've watched the special features of it. And I thought when I was looking – because after I saw the special feature, I looked it up online. And I was like – and then that's when I saw they had also Klingon Christmas Carol. So I thought it was the same same production company.
Or at least it is the same production company, but they didn't actually ever produce a full-blown production of it. Hmm. They just did they produced scenes, I think, for the purpose of the movie or for those special features. So they were actually brought in to, I believe, do that. But it's actually kind of interesting because Dr. Mark Okrand, the creator of the language – he's on the board of a theater company, I believe, in Washington, D.C. Hmm. And they did – they were doing scenes from Hamlet, maybe it was. And they brought in Stephen Fry, the British actor. And they had Stephen Fry on this stage doing Hamlet in Klingon.
Wow.
That's awesome.
It was really fun. They were just doing like it was selected scenes again, I think. And it was like it wasn't fully produced. I mean, they were kind of stopping and starting and stuff like that. But yeah, it was
okay.
I think if you poke around online, you can find it. It's pretty good.
And, and then now currently, like you said, you've got two, CDs or, EPs. I don't know what the kids don't call them CDs anymore. Do they?
Yeah, I mean, they are EPs. You have CDs. I do have physical copies of the CD. But everything's also on iTunes and Google Play and Amazon and Bandcamp and stuff like that. And they are EPs, technically. They're the first one is 6 songs, and the second one, the newest one, is 5 songs.
Okay, gotcha. You know, that's just incredible that you can actually put those together and do that. I mean, like you said, like people will give you songs that are already translated so you don't have to break your brain trying to do the translation.
I'm very, very fortunate. The Klingon language community has been extremely supportive of this project from the get-go. And that's been really awesome. Pitch Hope really helped that.
Sure.
The Klingon language, like people who were members of the Klingon Language Institute, they were some of the first people to go, oh my gosh, did you hear this? Like, she's singing accurate Klingon Chol. Oh my gosh. And they got super excited.
Wow.
And that was really cool. And a number of them had also helped translate it. So, but they had helped translate other things as well in the past. Like some of the same people who did Chichop, I think, also worked on the Klingon Gangnam Style that had come out like a year or two before.
Yeah.
I want to say I showed him that, and then that's when he was like, oh, look up Bite Me.
Yeah.
That translation is a 100% accurate translation. Unfortunately, the pronunciation on it is less so.
gotcha.
Far, far less so. And so that's been one of the things that has sort of happened over the years, is they would do these translations and then they wouldn't get people who were familiar with the language to actually do the final product. And so they were kind of like, well, at least we know it's accurate. And so my goal was to be 100% accurate with my pronunciation. And I treated it like I was an opera singer.
That's really difficult, especially because you can't really go to it, like the person down the street, and say, am I saying this correctly? You have to find somebody who actually speaks fluent Klingon, which
trained. During Klingon Christmas Carol, we had people from the Klingon Language Institute come in and actually train us on pronunciation. And so that was a huge thing. I had worked really hard on my pronunciation during the course of the show.
Gotcha.
And then I took what I had learned and I applied it to singing. And yeah, I was really proud of my pronunciation. There was like one guy who commented there and was like, she's not doing her big D right or whatever. And the people who jumped, and it was amazing the people who jumped on him because they were like, are you kidding me? She's got that sound right. She's got the right. Like, yeah. You're going to harp on the D?
Wow.
Like,
yeah. I mean, and in Hitchhob, there's that like one sentence that's like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, like that long, but in Klingon. And I'm just like, wow, that's like got to be really hard to say and then keep up with the music. It's just like that sentence like blows me away every time I see it.
I practiced a bunch before I actually went into the recording studio. And I did the same thing when we did a bunch of rehearsals before we did the recording of the CD. And then when I recorded the first CD, I would listen to playback and I'd be like, that line is wrong. And we'd punch in and I would redo lines. And I worked really hard on the pronunciation for that. And it's actually, there's one line on the first CD that is pronounced really, really badly. Hmm. Well, I mean, I say really, really badly. It's like one syllable, but I say it so many times. It's on Bad Romance. I mispronounced Yiwai. I on the album I said Yahweh instead of Yahweh.
Yahweh, the God of the Jews. Yeah.
But that's the thing is like, for like a guy like me, like I do know Klingon language, but I don't know. I can't like speak it. I don't, you know, like when I hear it, I know certain words, but I'm not like, I can't pick it. Right. If I heard it, I wouldn't be like, whoa. What the hell?
And that's just it. Like I knew, I kind of just when I realized it was wrong. The CD had been I'd gotten all of the copies of the CD already. Like everything was done. I was starting to ship stuff out, and I was listening back, and I'm like, oh crap!
Oh no!
And I'm like, oh, I worked so hard. But the funny thing is on this new EP that we just released back in April on Over the Rainbow, there's a moment near the beginning of the song where I very lightly mispronounced a couple of some of the ends of a couple words. Like they should have just been poo. And I added some extra sounds.
Okay.
In here. And I would have gone back, but it was such a beautiful take. And with that song, we actually did those takes all the way through from start to finish with my guitar player and the guy, Joe, who Joe Mizzi did all of the musical arrangement on it. He played just about every instrument on it except drums and cello and viola. He played everything else, wow. Guitar, violin, bass. He did everything. And then he mixed and mastered it.
It's incredible.
That's awesome. I heard you do that song live on one of the YouTube videos. It was amazing because just the audience's reaction to it is fantastic. Oh,
that was so beautiful. I love doing that song live because it's one of the songs that I really play super hard for laughs. And but we only did two takes of that song. And the second take was so lovely. I'm like, you know what? The first EP has got has some mispronunciations on it, too. I'm going to leave this. Because the take was so good that I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to recreate that. And because of the way we were recording it, we would have had to have gone back and just re-recorded the entire song again. There really wasn't a way to punch in and punch out because it was such a simple arrangement and so much depended on Joe and I kind of looking at each other and watching each other and doing that. It was a really symbiotic performance. Sure. And so.
Oh, there's certain things with also when you're doing any kind of art form, you're always super critical of everything you do.
Right.
So it's like, you're like, oh yep. Man, that just doesn't sound right. Or if I could have done a little better or any little things like that.
Oh yeah. I said you people to James Kerwin and Kipley Brown last week. I'm like, I wanted to cut that out, but they made a joke about it. So I had to leave it in. I'm like, I can't cut out a joke.
And then the other side of it is, you know, when you do something right and you know that something in there has that magic in it, you have to like kind of cradle those little imperfections with it. Because I something that drives me crazy in modern music today is that, you know, everything's so slick sounding.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I like to hear little imperfections, even in the recording. I know that some of these, you know, performance artists or bands or whoever, when you listen to the song, you know, they want it to be the best they can possibly do for that song. But it's right. also kind of nice to hear, like, maybe it's not quite perfect, you know, or yeah. you know, just little things.
It makes it more real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The goal with recording definitely was to get the best possible take of everything.
Yeah.
And there is such a beautiful there was something about the end of that take where I had this like really like lilting, yearning thing that I did with my voice on the very last note. And when it finished, I just kind of went, oh, that was magical. Mm-hmm. and Joe's sitting there going, that's the take. That's the take. Right. That's the one. And I'm like, I can live with the little bit of mistakes at the front of that song. Like, I can live with it.
That's awesome.
But we definitely, like, the first EP is super lo-fi. It was acoustic guitar, a hand, like an Irish war drum, and a bass. And with this one, we, like, went... It's definitely more produced mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. It's a lot cleaner. I got a lot more takes to be able to do things. We weren't doing it in in the same kind of studio situation. So I had a lot more leeway to take my time with things and to really get stuff really right. And the same with Joe. And it's just everything is so much cleaner. And it's all a little bit bigger, but still keeping with the kind of initial core that was started with the first EP of, you know, trying to keep the drums really simple. We didn't use any cymbals. So everything is just like kick and tom and yeah. and like toms and a little bit of snare, right. but no cymbals. And then and like the one song that's the most produced is probably the Kesha song Die Young. Hmm. But that one was so fun because it's so repetitive.
Yeah. Right.
Doing a little extra production on the, with the instrumentation and looping things a little bit more. It really played to this, turn that song. It made it
that's great.
A lot stronger.
Have you done a Metallica song yet? I feel like Metallica would be great for Klingon.
Yeah, it's hard it's hard. I wouldn't mind doing Metallica. The initial concept behind the first EP was the idea of 90s pop princess stuff, which is why I did Britney Spears and Celine Dion and Kiss Me. It was all about like
right.
schmaltzy 90s pop.
Yes. right, yeah, yeah.
yeah. Instead of a pop princess, I'm a pop warrior. Like right, that's
right.
You know,
right.
This EP is a little more rock and the new EP is a little more rock and roll. And definitely some of that is influenced by Joe, who's like got a punk rock background, although he also has a classical violin background.
That's awesome.
But his band
any fiddle?
Is. Yeah. Yeah. He's amazing. That guy blows my mind. And so
that's great.
I highly recommend if you like punk music, you have to check out The Miserables. M-I-Z-Z-E-R. A-L-B-L, I don't know. I will send you a link.
Cool.
They're so good. The Miserables, but it's M-I-Z-Z.
You can post in the group, too.
Oh, yeah. They're just fantastic, and I am just like, support Joe and the Pop Warrior.
That's awesome, because I do enjoy punk music myself, but, you know, just to have somebody in there that's doing those kind of the musicianship of it and get into all that stuff. It's cool.
Yeah.
So
he's great.
So before we started doing the show, we were talking and, you said you're working on your second stage test for, is it the Klingon Language Institute? Is that where the test
yes.
is coming from? So like, once you get there, are you going to like start, like once you pass that, or have you already started, translating some a song that you want to do specifically?
So the one nice thing after the first EP was kind of collected from things that people had already translated. This second EP that I just did, I was actually able to ask people because I had I had established enough credibility at that point within the language community. There were people who were like, hey, if you need something translated, let me know. And,
right.
And so I was able to reach out to a group of people and say, hey, I have this list of songs that I would really like to translate and or have translated. And Mother was a song that Joe had suggested, the Danzig song.
That's awesome.
And so I actually got together with one of my friends locally, who's a member of the Klingon Language Institute. And if you ever come to Kepa, he usually teaches the beginner classes. And the two of us sat down and we did that translation together. He did most of the heavy lifting on the language. And I kind of helped with more of the cultural side of things and like was kind of working on making it make sense for Klingons. And like, because there were certain parts of the song that I felt like, well, that's not a very Klingon sense, you know, a Klingon
wouldn't say those things. Yeah.
You know, or yeah, that really isn't, that's really not very Klingon. So what can we do to make this more Klingon? Like, what would a Klingon mother do as opposed to a human? And so that one's filked a little bit. It's really fun. The way that the things that got changed. And that's true of a bunch of the songs too. Like they're not all literal and perfect translations in that regard.
And they shouldn't be. I think having them be Klingon centricized just makes them all the better.
Well, just going back to Hitchhop, there's no actual
word for kiss. But Klingons bite anyway. I mean, Jerry.
I know. Right. Well, you know.
Well, and that was too. Like all of the songs, like Baby One More Time, Hit Me Baby One More Time. Like that's. That takes on a whole new meaning when it comes to Klingon.
Absolutely. That's great, though. Oh, my God.
Well, because, I mean, like, you know, they break their bones whenever they're doing it. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That's great.
Julian was so upset when Jadzia and Worf came in with broken bones. Yeah. It's like, oh, they did it, and I didn't get Jadzia. Oh, damn man. It.
Oh, curses.
Poor Julian.
Julian.
Because he knew what happened, because Quark and Grelka had already done it and had some bones broken, so he already kind of knew the deal. Damn, poor Julian.
That's I don't know what to think about that, but yeah, we are talking also about the episode Deep Space Nine episode Once More Unto the Breach, which is season 7, episode 7. And originally aired November 11th, 1998, written by Ronald D. Moore.
Yes, love Ronald D. Moore.
I just heard him on NPR recently.
Oh, yeah?
They interviewed him. So
talking about the Scottish show that you're doing?
Yeah, something like that.
Was he ready Outlander. For Outlander?
Outlander.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's a switch.
This is now the Outlander podcast. I've only seen half of the first season. Thanks, guys.
Oh, I didn't watch all of it. I read the first book. And that was enough. I tried reading the second book, and it just didn't do it for me the way the first book did. It's sexy. It's super sexy.
I tried watching the show because I love Ronald D. Moore. I absolutely love Ronald D. Moore. But, like, I don't see enough of him coming through the show. You know, what I expect from Ronald D. Moore after, you know, 14 seasons of Star Trek and, you know, all of Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, this doesn't feel like Ronald D. Moore. This doesn't, because I know it's an adapted work from a book, like you said, but still, I'm like, where's the Ronald D. Moore-ness in this? I don't feel it. I kind of hope he starts, will get drafted to Discovery eventually.
Maybe.
I'd love to see him.
And we get the character Kor, which is reprised by John Colicos. And we have our past guest, J.G. Hertzler, as General Martok. So, pretty cool.
J.G., I love J.G.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
We got to talk to him a couple months back at the local con here. He was so cool.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
I met him briefly at last year's Chicago Star Trek convention. Yeah, he was really nice. I also met Robert O'Reilly at last year's Star Trek convention. And I'm happy for the opportunity to run into him again, but also I didn't totally humiliate myself. He laughed and hugged me, but it was the Star Trek convention last year, and it was Thursday night before the convention started, and a bunch of us are hanging out in the bar because that Thursday night was September 8th, And so it was the official, it was Star Trek Day. So it was actually the official 50th anniversary day.
All right.
And so a huge group of us had gathered in the bar to for a toast. And so I'd been throwing back cocktails that tasted like candy and was on my third, I think starting on my third one. And my friend Chris came running over and she's like, Jen, Robert O'Reilly's here. He wants to meet the girl who sings in Klingon. And I just hop off my bar stool. I'm all like John Wayne in it. I don't know. And I walk over and he goes, I don't, am I allowed to swear?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Swear all you want.
Yes. Yeah.
So I walk over and he goes, Nuke Nech. And I go, hey, Nuke Nech, motherfucker. And he busts out laughing and he gives me a huge hug and gracious enough to take a picture with me. And I'm red faced and because I was drinking and he's got a huge grin on his face. So I'm sure it wasn't a terrible memory for him, but I was also like, 30 seconds later, I'm like, what did you just say? You're crazy. I have no filter.
That's hilarious.
None.
Nook neck.
That's
which is what do you want in Klingon?
Yeah, no, but that's right. That's just great that you actually can do.
Now, he's going to be at Starbase Indy this year.
Okay.
And I'm performing at Starbase Indy this year. I'm a guest.
Well, then you got to musical. Just,
you just got to say it
when you see him.
And I had said at one point, the memory had just popped up on my like on Facebook memories or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I posted it and was just like, I wonder who I'm going to swear at the Star Trek convention this year.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, if you meet us, you can swear at us. That'll be cool.
We'll be all right.
Yeah, speaking of drink that tastes like candy, we're having Roctaginos tonight.
We are.
Ooh. I'm drinking some blood wine.
Wow.
Well, it's port, but it's port. I call port blood wine.
Well, that's how I make my blood wine with port.
He's made it. Didn't you do a video?
Yeah, I sent it to her.
Oh, right. Yeah.
How embarrassing I am cooking
I
with you.
I do a mulled wine as well. When I'm making blood wine for like room parties at conventions, I will usually mull wine.
That's awesome.
Well, so the episode here,
if we ever get to it.
We'll get to it. We have okay. Should we explain the Alamo?
Oh yeah, she probably doesn't know.
We have a theory. We have a theory that O'Brien and Bashir go to the Alamo and they don't really do the Alamo. They're kind of being intimate together.
It's the foxhole. It's the old foxhole mentality.
Come on. Don't cheapen and dirty the great bromance of Miles and Bashir.
This was from our like early episode episode 9, we did Bada Bing, Bada Bang. And, you know, we were just talking about the Alamo. They're asking, you know, Vic Fontaine to come. And they're just like, yeah, we just need a third partner. You're just getting stale.
Don't cheapen their bromance. I think that, like, they are supreme hashtag friendship goals.
Well,
but there was that one part where, like, he's like, I wish Keiko was more like a man. And then he looks at Bashir and is like,
Yeah, I don't know. There's all this subtle like I don't know.
I don't think that Discovery is the first gay relationship. I'm pretty sure this was.
This was it.
Huh? There's already been the first gay relationships. DS9 did it all. They had the gay relationship. They had the ongoing story. They had the conflict between your characters.
Yeah.
And all the stuff Discovery claims. Well,
it's Brokeback Mountain, but out in space. So you know,
and the Alamo.
Jen's all upset now.
She's breaking my heart. I mean, I'm fine if that, you know, that's totally fine.
It's just a really old joke. It's just a really old joke.
Like, oh.
Well, anyways.
I love their friendship. I love their friendship.
I love it too. They're some of my favorite characters once they start, like, you know, hitting it off.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like,
they're just like an old married couple.
Mm-hmm. Like, just like me and Aaron. Mm-hmm. Which Aaron has described as that.
So, anyways, that's
But the intro to that Alamo story and that concept of legends, because they're talking about like legends and the legend of Davy Crockett, and Worf has that great line that was like, if you believe he's a legend, and you believe, if you believe in the man and you believe he did those things, then he's a legend.
And he died a hero.
Don't believe it, then he was just a man.
Right.
And that completely feeds into Core coming in and this concept of what is a legend and how do we treat our legends? And, you know, is he just a, you know, maybe he is just a man. So I think it's a beautiful little mini side story that works its way into the overall theme.
It's a great preamble to the actual episode itself, because
it's foreshadowing, because it's so brilliantly done. And like this, I shed a couple of tears when the episode was over. I was like, went full circle and it worked so good.
Worf completely sets the tone for the episode in that one moment of, by interrupting their argument and just, you know.
One thing about Worf is he learns, he can like distill things down to its pure elements, like what it is. Mm-hmm. So that's a cool thing about Worf constantly, is like he sees through all the BS and just cuts through to what's essential.
But that's what Klingon is in general. Like they cut out all the BS.
Well,
I mean, like when you look at their culture specifically, and the language specifically, they're very direct people.
See,
so
me and Dave also at long past, we did a 4-part series of all Klingons, everything going from the original Discovery to original series and
Enterprise to original series.
Yeah. So.
All right.
So, and we kind of like recapped of, and we just discussed the Klingons as a race and as a culture. And Worf seems to be the shining beacon example of what Klingon should be, but often are not.
It's like reading a book and seeing what the white knight should be. Like, you know, but
yeah, he's the idealized
version. But then you look at actual history and like these guys are terrible.
Yeah. He's the white knight of Klingons culture.
And I have this my husband and I have had arguments about this, in that I say that Worf is actually that Jadzia is a better Klingon than Worf, and that Worf is. He believes in a sort of idealized Klingon that doesn't really exist.
Yes.
Because he was raised by humans.
Right.
And he was raised by humans and he was constantly wanting to be more Klingon, but he couldn't because he would hurt people. So he kind of buried a bunch of that. But he really had this idealized notion of what it meant to be a Klingon, because he wasn't raised around them.
I agree completely.
Exactly.
I feel like he isn't always a great Klingon.
Well,
he's actually.
I think in spirit he is. I just think he loses the translation of being Klingons, like
because he wasn't raised in the culture.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, he's trying so hard to be Klingon. Like he's
trying to be Klingon by the letter of the law instead of the spirit of the law. And all the Klingons are Klingon by the spirit of the law and almost never by the letter of the law.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, they just kind of do what they want.
They throw the word honor on a lot, but some of the most dishonorable people I've seen in Star Trek. So, right. I mean,
Klingons, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting character study, Worf himself, you know, because,
right.
You know, he's like that kind of guy that had been outside. He was obviously an outsider for so long. He wants to get in so bad to that in group, he becomes like kind of like
he's trying too hard.
Yeah, he's trying too hard.
Yeah, he is. He's constantly trying too hard. And Jadzia is just like a pass the blood wine kind of chick, you know?
Right. And poor Ezri.
Sure, why not?
And poor Ezri. She's like, pass the blood wine. Sip. Oh, wait, I don't like this.
Yeah.
I hate this. Yeah.
Right. No, that's an interesting relationship she has with herself.
She's like, I used to love it, but now I hate it.
So we have the talk about Davy Crockett and the Battle of the Alamo and all that stuff. And like you said, Worf kind of brings it down to it's a legend or he's a man. Either one, you know, you have to accept one or the other. So and then we get Core.
That settles that then.
Core right. comes to visit Worf, and he basically says that he's kind of winding down his clock and he needs to die a warrior's death.
Oh my God. But you know what? This is the only bit of Klingon in this show that is technically accurate and yet pronounced so poorly when he walks in and says "nuke nay."
Yeah, it was really bad.
I was like, was he saying there is not another bit of Klingon in this episode that is that means anything. Like, we've all been I was actually having a conversation about this with someone today. Like, people on this episode keep going Chave. Chave doesn't mean anything.
Wow.
But to them, somehow it means yes, sir. And then that song at the end, there have been people who've been trying to sort of retcon it and figure out, like, what it's supposed to be. But it was basically this? Paramount Hole, not actual Klingon Hole. But that's like a story for when we get there later. But anyway, this one tiny word, I was like, oh.
They also don't say Calicam.
Yeah, they say meters, right?
Bastards.
No Calicams.
Klingons don't use meters. Klingons don't shake hands. They bang heads.
Well, so Kor believes that he's made maybe some bad choices or made people kind of pissed off in the Empire and he can't get any favors. So,
like, yeah, I was an asshole.
I've been an asshole.
Yeah, single-minded devotion.
Yes.
To these two awesome spiky goatee things, which I've never been able to get myself. I really want them.
Dave, I don't...
I love that line that he's got sort of, he's help me end my life as I have lived it as a warrior.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
Oh.
No, it's so, and you know, Worf being the
honorable
romantic Klingon
he is,
says he's going to go see if he can get something going there. So he asks Martok, and Martok are like, no, no.
Sisko doesn't like summary execution, so I'm just going to deny anything you want.
There's so many lovely lines in this. I took a lot of notes while I was watching this. I rewatching this the other night, and I love, he is an old man. He asks nothing but to fight and die as a warrior. Ugh, I love it. It's, yeah.
That's great. No, it's cool. You're kind of left wondering, well, why is Martok so against Kor? Like, what?
Right.
What's the reasoning?
Who rubbed him the wrong way?
Maybe that's why he's got that eye missing. Anyways,
that's not why he lost that eye.
I know. I made a joke. It's a joke.
Yeah.
It's making jokes. We're drunk.
Don't joke about Martok losing his eye. That was intense. Man. Stupid Jem'Hadar.
Man.
Yeah. The funny thing about him losing his eye is, like, the producers wanted him to lose his other eye, but he's like, no. J.J. Herschel was like, no, we can't do that because I'm blind and the eye you want me to cover up, that you want me, what you want to leave me with. So no, I need my good eye so I can see.
That's funny.
That's amazing.
Well, so then we have a jump to Martok and Sisko making plans to, you know, hit all these Dominion facilities, and they're basically just gonna create chaos.
It's a cavalry raid. And he's like, what's that?
Oh, but we didn't, but you know what we didn't talk about? That conversation between him and Worf, that's when you found out why he didn't want him.
That was later.
That comes right after
it's,
this.
It's later when they're on the bridge.
Yeah, so basically Martok.
Oh, should I skip a page of notes?
Okay, so on Martok's ship, after they make their plans to do their attack.
But he explains to him, it's a cavalry raid. I was waiting for Martok to go, what's a horse? It's like, he explains what cavalry is to ride on horseback. Like, what's a horse? Tell me what a horse is.
I'm assuming the Universal Translator did something to make it.
It's that thing Cybok rode from Vulcan to Nimbus 3.
There you go.
It's a magic space horse
that
can just gallop through space.
Nimbus 3. Anyways. So Worf comes again to talk to Martok about getting Kor onto the ship, onto this attack, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Kor brings out basically that his family comes from kind of a poor family, farmers that were warriors.
No, Martok is from the poor family.
That's what
poor
I meant. Family. Yeah, and Martok is. And then he was going to become
the Cathalolans.
He was going to become an officer, and Kor just rejected his application.
Apparently, Klingons did a unanimous acceptance letter for all the High Council. That's crazy. Klingons don't agree on anything. How did anyone ever become an officer who was born outside of it? It makes no sense that it had to be unanimous.
I don't know. And then Martok said that he was lucky when a Romulan vessel attacked. He got a battlefield commission, and that's
from plumber to captain.
That's right, plumber to captain.
Cleaning up all the gut and prune juice.
Oh, that's another running joke: is that the bathrooms and Klingon ships have got to be just atrocious. They just got to be the worst.
I can't even imagine.
No, we've gone into detail, but you don't have to listen to those episodes. So anyways.
I don't even know which ones they are. We can't even tell her which ones to avoid.
Yeah, I don't. We've done so many hours of talking Star Trek. I don't even know what episodes we've talked about certain things. So, Martok basically agrees to let Kor be his third officer, but basically keep him on my way.
Have him on a leash at all times. He is your targ for all intents and purposes.
Right. And after that has been agreed, Kor is doing some catch up with Dax, and then when Worf comes, and they're kind of reminiscing at the time of some old antics they got into.
Oh, that albino guy was so great, right? Oh, wait, no, he was a bad guy. No.
And Worf just tells him, hey, basically, you can, you know, you're going to be on the ship on this attack squadron, but you're third in command. He's kind of like, what?
What? I don't get my own little bird of prey.
But then he finds out basically the reasons why is that, hey,
you're lucky to get anything.
Yeah, because you wronged Martok a long time ago. And he's like, I don't remember. I did so many stupid things.
There were so many lists. It might be possible.
Right.
Kirk was on all of them.
Well, we see him. Well, no, they don't really talk Kirk. There was the other one with the albino one. They mentioned Kirk. So when he shows up for on the bridge of Martok's ship, they're all like, oh, "The Dahar Master!
The Dahar Master!
He's here! Ooh!" And
Kor here on our ship.
and
all the Klingons fangirling.
Yeah, and Martok couldn't roll his one eye hard enough.
He's like, I need to take off this prosthetic so I can roll both of them.
So they can roll out my ears when I'm done rolling back so far in my head. Like, oh, this guy. Next, we got a strange
scene. But he does come off as pretty humble. He's like, you know, thank you. And like,
right.
Yeah, no, Kor does, but Martok is just
I mean, you know, he's Kor's at least trying to be humble at this point. And then people start shaking his hand. I'm like, when do Klingons shake hands?
Shake hands, right?
That's a good question.
Yeah, what is this?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's Paramount Hole.
Yeah, maybe. next we get in Quark's bar that Ezra and Kira are talking. And
Quark walks up, but he thinks they're talking about Worf and not Kor.
Yeah, it's right. So silly. It's the one scene that I feel like was just absolute filler.
Well, I know that the B plot sort of runs into with Kor's story in certain ways, but I was thinking about it today, and I was like, I can't really seem to thread them really well together. Well,
according to Memory Alpha, this was only there to kind of set up like Quark's later on, like, you know, like issues with
Ezra.
Oh.
It's kind of like foreshadowing for stuff to come up. That's what Armin Shimmerman thought, according to the Memory Alpha. That it's kind of setting up for later episodes with his pining after her. Because there was supposed to be another scene with him and C-Rock Lofton, Jake. Mm-hmm. Another scene with Jen. But, you know, less scenes with Jake is always good.
Yeah.
Aw.
See, she doesn't like
I hated
like
Jake early on, but I really liked Jake later.
He's like he's like my Wesley for DS9.
We beat up on the show a lot, but we love it too. So
I don't beat up on DS9. I beat up specifically on
certain
Jake.
Characters. Well, Jake, yes, yeah.
The show I beat up on is Voyager.
And Voyager gets a lot of beating up. So next we have Martok telling war stories in the ship mess hall, and then obviously, Kor starts. They start asking him, and he gets into the Caleb IV battle with the Federation with Kang. And again, Martok's like, "Oh, this guy
rolling my one eye. If I keep rolling it, it'll break.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'll be blind.
Sit. No special treatment. But then he's like, back in the day.
Back in my day." next, the crew gets to get called to battle stations, and Kor seems to have us a little bit of a senior moment there, trying to figure out where he's supposed to
What's
go.
What's a battle station?
You know what, though? The funny thing is that that's technically not even the first senior moment that he has, because in the scene with Worf, when Worf is saying, hey, this is why Martok hates you back at like Quark's.
Right.
He had a couple of moments there where he the first thing was he says, you know, oh, well, there are so many lists. I mean, I guess it's possible. But there was clearly a tone to his voice where he's like, I do not remember this.
Yeah.
And then as they're getting ready to leave, he says, what was the name of that ship again?
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's King.
Yeah.
So,
And he goes, oh, that's right. You know, I mean, he plays it off. And here's my grandmother got dementia during her sort of final years.
Yeah.
Couple years. And so I really sort of, I saw those moments.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
I didn't necessarily realize they were happening at the time.
Sure.
But retrospectively, I was like, oh man, it really reminded me of some of those final moments with my grandma final years, especially early on where she was just sort of getting a little forgetful, repeating some of the same stories again, and, or, you know, just her short-term memory was a little, you know, starting to kind of go on the fritz. And so those moments for me kind of hit home.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, my grandfather passed away from Alzheimer's, so it's very similar vein. You know, at first it was minor stuff, you know, and then like doesn't remember anything.
And then and all of a sudden it's big stuff.
They don't they don't even know who you are anymore. So I mean, it's crazy.
Right.
So, but yeah, so he's getting these senior moments. So obviously, and they get to the bridge, and there next we have this great scene where the ships are attacking, decloaking and attacking this Cardassian
outpost.
Yeah. And
right.
Then one of the Cardassian cruisers starts attack. And during the attack, Martok and Worf are basically knocked out.
Knocked down. It's like Martok got winded real bad so no one can hear him shouting orders.
Right.
And Worf, it was so weird.
And Worf takes a 2-second cat nap.
He's taking sleep on the deck, sleeping on the deck of the ship. And
he's got a narcolepsy.
It's just like, dang! And it's like, why is he, what?
Yeah,
why is everybody listening to him? Dahar Master.
Yeah, Kor takes over and he starts thinking he's back at Caleb 4 with Kang.
He's like, Kang, do this. And like, Kang's been dead for 4 years. So the fangirl gets really pissed off. It's like, wow, this guy's not great.
Right. And, obviously, Martok is trying to get up and saying, shut that guy up, get him out of here, you know, and he's like, we got to leave.
Yeah. He pulls his knife.
He throws his knife, and Worf wakes up to the last second and
catches it.
Now,
like a ninja.
Now,
like the Green Arrow.
I got to say, just Worf waking up off the deck floor and catching this knife is pretty impressive. But what's even
he wasn't knocked unconscious.
What's even more impressive to me is that how that scene was actually filmed. Like the knife was throwing through the air, Worf catches it. Now I'm sure there was some camera trick on how they actually did that, but it's like that's actually pretty cool that he could do that. You know, I don't know how that would actually happen. Normally you just bat it away, like knock it.
You know? But you knock it and like it sticks through your hands. Well, on my Nintendo
like
Switch.
Just boop.
Yeah.
Oh, on my Nintendo Switch.
Was taking
box.
A cat nap, so then he just wakes up and knocks it off. Like,
meow. No, on my Nintendo Switch unboxing video that I did, I kind of did something like where I was being Eeyore and I stabbed the boxes, and then I was being myself and I like took it away. So it's like you just basically just move off camera.
Sure.
I mean, it's not as impressive as like, you know, a throwing look, but I thought it looked fairly convincing that I like took the knife away.
Yeah.
Just with the motion, you've actually got the knife in hand, but the motion you're doing makes it look like you caught it.
I wonder how they did that.
It does look cool.
I'm sure there was some trick they did. I just don't know what it was. Yeah. So they escape, and during that time, like you said, they Martok tried to kill him, but he's like, get Kor off his bridge.
He just like does the walk of shame. he puts his head down.
Get that old man off my bridge.
It's almost like Arrested Development. He just puts his head down and walks off really slow.
It's pretty good.
Isn't always the Charlie Brown music that plays.
Oh man, that would have been awesome if that was playing.
So someone needs to re-edit that.
Yeah. Get it on it, internet. So after the when the back on Deep Space Nine, Quark is talking and declares tells Ezra and well, it tells Jake that he's
don't hurt. Waste your life on another Worf. You're young and you're beautiful.
Well, he's telling Jake that what he, heard, and then he goes to Ezra that Ezra that you shouldn't go back with Worf.
That's, no. Save yourself for me.
And I thought about it as like, well, okay, so she has the experience, you know, from the past of all the, you know, all the adventures and, you know, just everything that she's had with this symbiont with her. And so that kind of works in with Kor and his experience in life. So that's the only thing I could tell. But then she's got to kind of carve out her own path.
Yeah.
You know, like make herself different. Or whatever you want to call it, you know, make her own life with this, you know, symbiont. So,
yeah, they kind of go back and forth on that a little bit. With
but she calls him a sweetheart.
Oh, and Quark just cannot get enough of that. He's grinning, you know, ear to very
she
large ear.
She loves me. She really loves me.
And Jake just thinks he's
Jake's like, you're certifiable.
Yeah, you're certifiable. Yeah. Which he could be right. Next thing we have Corey's in that mess hall, and then Martog and his aide are in there, and they start basically just mocking him because of.
Well, that scene is so hard to watch.
It is hard to watch, and
he's so mean to Kor.
Yeah. So, but what Kor brings out, he doesn't say anything as he mocks him, and he says something about
enjoy youth,
enjoy youth,
and says it's, savor it's, the fruit of life.
Yeah, yeah, because as you get older, the taste turns bitter. And yeah,
don't live too long.
Yeah.
I mean, Kor's got to be, what, like in his 150s?
Yeah, I think I saw 140 or something, or in that ballpark.
Yeah, he's old. Like, Klingons live a long time, considering they always try to get themselves killed.
Pretty much, yeah.
If you don't interrupt the aging process, Klingons get very old.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's really that there's that phrase or that sort of like proverb that there are no old warriors.
Right, right.
You know, and and it's so there's a scene later on where they, you know, it's that they talk about that too, but it really starts to hit home.
Well, next is Martok's quarters, Worf, you know, doing some personnel assignment stuff. And he basically admits that it was a mistake to bring Kor onto the ship. They shouldn't have done that. And he says when they return, he'll talk to Chancellor Gowron and see if he can get him some kind of menial position.
You know, on the High Council. Yeah. You know, just make him happy for his last few years. But I think it's probably my favorite scene in the entire episode where Martok's like, you know, I've wanted to have my way and make him pay for what he did to me, and now it's just, you know, it's like I regret doing that.
I actually wrote this line down verbatim. He says, "I dreamed of this moment. I had that moment now, and I took no joy from it."
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah.
What a
so good.
Yeah. No, it's a great scene in his Martok's character.
And Gigi just. That's so good. This is my favorite scene of the episode, I think.
Yeah, it's a good episode. I mean, good part, too, because, you know, it's his revenge. His revenge was...
And it's like revenge didn't do anything good for you. It's just like...
Yeah.
Right.
It's just bitter in my mouth. It just didn't do anything for me. It's just... I got it, and it's just... I feel crappy about it. So, yeah. So powerful.
Then they're interrupted, and there's a Jem'Hadar attack, and apparently they've somehow been able to track their cloaking devices.
With those tachyons! We got tachyons fix everything.
Magic tachyons. They do everything.
They make warp bubbles around wooden sailboats. Yeah. Sail ships.
All sorts of crazy stuff.
They can be planet cores.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, tachyons do everything.
Tachyons are magic.
Can I warm my food up with tachyons?
Yeah, they go back in your food to go back in time.
No!
I'm sure Neelix could figure out a way to...
Neelix probably
would. That would be chronotons. If I warmed up my food with chronotons, I'd have to, you know, it'd be there yesterday.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
Where did that pizza go?
Chronowave. Oh, let's make that chronowave. That all of a sudden food shows up at different periods in time.
It's like, oh, man, that's tomorrow's food. I got it today.
Meatloaf.
What is now, sir?
Yeah, what was that, with the space balls?
It's like, soon.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So there's basically, they get this plan that they're going to rendezvous with the Defiant and a bunch of other Federation ships, but they need just a little
10 minutes.
10 minutes of time so the Jem'Hadar don't catch up with them. So they need one ship that's going to kind of fall behind and kind of...
Maybe you shouldn't have used the 100-year-old bird of prey. Just saying.
Okay. Well,
you know, faster ship, newer ship, you know.
Well, Worf says that he's going to do this, and, you know, everyone's like, sure, Worf, go ahead, do it.
I need to go meet Jadzia and Stovokor.
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 And so Kor finds out about this, and then he basically hypo sprays Worf into unconsciousness, takes the ship.
Oh, himself. But that was that scene between him and Derek. Derek, the aide, the old aide, is the one who tells him about that.
Sure, yeah.
And they have that great moment where they're like, men of our generation never stood on ceremony, and like, you know, and they I miss those days, and, you know, kind of they sort of have that. Yeah, you know, they're the young generation, they're quick to judge but slow to forgive. Like, there were a lot of good moments in that scene too, so.
Yeah, no, there definitely was. And I think I want to go back and, when we talk about it, just revisit some of that, those sentiments that they pass between each other.
Yeah.
Kor does go, obviously engage the Jem'Hadar, and they're like, how can he hold off all these ships at once? You know, it's kind of like they're in awe of what Kor is doing.
Well, they think it's Worf at first, and then Worf.
Well, right, yeah.
Like, Worf's gonna die of glorious battle, yeah. And then Worf's like, "Today's not my day to die." Who's on this ship? It's an autopilot.
I programmed myself as friend.
Jadzia passed one thing off to me. It's how to program a ship.
So and then obviously Kor buys them time to meet up with the Federation ships, and they.
But you don't ever see what he does.
No, you don't. But it's kind of it.
And my theory is he's
talk about it. I love that they're basically doing a play by play when they realize what's happening. Right. They're,
yeah,
just on the edge of the sensors. Oh, look, they've all stopped, and they're all like, "Oh, how can they do it?" And you know what? My theory, he called them up on the view screen. It was doing like a one man stand up performance for him.
It was like the Seinfeld blurpy song in the background.
One of the things that I really liked about the fact that we didn't see that is that we had that moment with these people who had the last time they were in the same room with Kor had mocked him to his face, and now we get to see them have that like
reverence.
That right, get that reverence back and realize that this man is still a Dahar master. And
sure, yeah, yeah. No, I mean,
master of stand up.
Dahar master of stand up.
And then it's like, oh, your joke wasn't funny. Destroy,
destroy.
This doesn't play in front of Klingons, guys. This doesn't play in front of Klingons. So this Jem'Hadar walks up to a Vorta.
What's the deal with airline peanuts?
And then the founder's like, what's the deal with airline?
So
what is it about a bird of prey?
It's not a bird. It's not prey. And then it disappears.
What are all the founders doing in the puddle?
Yeah.
Isn't Gawk funny?
Doesn't it tickle when it goes down your throat and out your anus? Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
No! Yeah.
Anyway, so...
Klingon bathrooms again. It's a terrible place.
Terrible place. Don't want to visit there. Okay, so
they sing a song.
They sing a song, and basically...
Despite the fact that this episode has terrible Klingon in it, I would have liked for him to have said, like, long live the Empire in actual Klingon.
Oh, right. Like, yeah, that would have been cool. That would have been cool.
Beamed out to, like, go to the ship. I was kind of like, man.
Come on.
Talk, Judge, whoa.
Yeah. Why couldn't you hear that? I don't know. And that's basically wraps up. They're drinking their wine and singing their song for Kor. Jen, you are a guest. We would love to hear what your feelings and thoughts after seeing this episode.
It was actually your suggestion. We try to ask our guests what their favorite episodes are. And this is the first one you picked. I'm like, sweet, we've not done it yet.
I really like this episode. This was one of my favorite episodes when I was first starting to watch some Star Trek to study Klingons for a Klingon Christmas Carol 7 years ago. It was one of the early ones that I watched. And I just really, I felt like it was one of the really good episodes for giving Klingons a little bit more humanity, is not the right word necessarily, Klinganity. but it really gave them, you know, what happens to a warrior when they get old?
Right.
What happens when their value has diminished as a fighter? Can they still fight? And I mean, this episode kind of, even watching it again, and I've watched it multiple times now, it still chokes me up a little bit at the end when they sing to him. And I love the bookend of the moment where, you know, you have them talking about the Alamo and what does it take to make a legend. And at the end of the, you know, the very last part, they're talking about, you know, one ship against 10. How is this even going to happen? And Worf is the one who steps in again and says, he will succeed. He is core. He's the Dahar master. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, he's legend. He is a legend and he will make it happen. And then he did. And his final act of a Klingon, he died not just honorably, but in a blaze of glory and the way that a Klingon wants to die. And I that was really powerful to me. I found that it's so powerful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love this episode. It's a very moving episode for Klingon fans and for Klingons.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Dave?
It's definitely moving to me too. I spoke with Jen just on chat and I was just like, yeah, this episode made me cry at the end. It's just like, I say this more and more on the show, like the older I get, the more Star Trek like hits me in the gut and I'm just like, wow, that's really poignant. That's really sad. It's got a message. Like, that's what I love. I mean, Star Trek, it's always had a message, but as I'm older, the message is way more.
I think you start seeing real life impact.
Yeah.
When you're younger,
yeah,
it's like, what?
Yeah, you really do.
Yeah. Younger, you don't
And
really
this
care.
Was definitely one, you know, where we, especially I feel like in this sort of age of technology and stuff like that, we really tend to dismiss our aging population too often. And so it's, I think, a really lovely reminder.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And a necessary reminder right about now.
Yeah. And so beautifully done too. It's a beautiful reminder as well. Sad, but beautiful.
Right.
One of the things that kind of stuck out to me in the episode was that, I kind of feel like that was his like end game. Like he wanted his own ship so he could like just bomb out and go in a blaze of glory.
Yeah,
I almost kind of wonder if he was like playing at being old. Almost.
Oh, because that's my plan. Did I ever tell you my plan when I get older?
No.
When I get older, like really, really old, like I'm gonna go into like stores and like shoplift. And I'm like, oh, I thought I paid for this. And I'm just going to like steal tons of shit. Just to act confused.
I didn't get that. I didn't get that read off that episode. There seemed to be sort of that genuine senior moment forgetfulness or like the onset of dementia kind of thing. That's how it felt to me, especially in that moment on the bridge where he just loses all reason. That to me did not feel like it was supposed to be a forced fake memory.
Sure. I mean, I definitely, you know, that's a message, you know, like poor Korn is Alzheimer's. And like, you know, it definitely reads that way. But at the same time, Klingons are always devious. There's always more to what a Klingon says because there's.
I mean, I feel like that's some serious, like, that's almost like a Romulan territory of devious, though. Like, fake it that hard. I don't know.
But, you know, he also had the gut punch of being like, oh, I'm a third officer. So he's like, he's got to find a way to kill himself without killing Worf.
Right.
So,
right.
You know. It seemed, you know, but he didn't know about the plan until the minister came into him and told him about it. So it's just kind of like. I mean, like, I feel like it could play either way. It's most definitely the dementia. It's real. But at the same time, I could sort of see Kor kind of playing with it, just so he could go out in that blaze of glory. Because the very first thing, right. pretty much the very first thing he says is like, you know, I want to die a warrior's death.
Sure, yeah.
And so, like, it was on his mind, because I watched the episode twice, once the other day, once today, and that's one of the first things out of his mouth. He's like, you know, I'm old and I want to have a warrior's death. It's big. He doesn't say it directly, but that's what he wants.
Sure.
And you can tell from what it's – so that's why today I was kind of thinking maybe that's what's going on. Maybe he's just trying to get –
Yeah, but I also think it's because he realizes, too, that he's forgetting things. There is a moment in that scene with Derek where they're talking about the where he's finding out that that's the plan. And he has this really this page of notes that I took is just like almost all quotes. Mm-hmm. And it just says he says, "I miss a great deal of those days." And the way that he says it, he's clearly, you know, when they're talking about, you know, they're talking about the past and, you know, and the way that he says, "I miss a great deal of those days," it clearly felt to me like he's saying, "I'm forgetting more and more every day." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm missing more and more pieces of my past and the way things were. Right. And, you know, he's kind of like, I'm a warrior, you know, I shouldn't be forgetting things. I should still be fighting.
Maybe it's a little bit of both because, because I mean, you think he's like nuts, but then he's got that scene where, you know, where he talks about, you know, life becomes better when you get older. And then he's also like, oh, I'm going to get a hypo so I can knock Worf out so he doesn't die. So we don't both beam over and both die. Like he's enough. He's pretty there. He's not.
No,
he's enough down. There. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. No, he's not. He's not totally out to lunch or anything. He's just.
But it's sometimes he's. But I think maybe he was playing it up so that he could. I definitely think it's probably a mix of both.
That could be.
Could be.
What do you think? What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, a couple things. This is sort of like the Gran Torino of Star Trek, where, you know. The character is so old and he's going to sacrifice himself for, you know, the younger
greater good
in the greater good and the younger,
generation.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, we were talking before how he was talking with, Martok's egg and they were saying, you know, basically that these young people, they don't get it and they don't know what they're, you know, like, but,
right.
But my feeling more than anything is that, I think every generation has that kind of feeling, is that the younger generation doesn't get it. And, you know, us older generation has it. Like, you know, when I was younger, it was the baby boomers knocking on the Gen Xers. Now it's the Gen Xers are knocking on the millennials, you know. And it's just like, you know, when does it end? It's just all the same. I think right. I think when you're young – yeah, you're driven. You have aspirations of whatever you want to do with your life, and you miss some of the things that are important because of whatever you're working towards. And so the older generation is like, "Oh, you're missing all these important pieces. You're skipping over this. You're not paying attention to this." You know, it could by the time you get older, you kind of start figuring it all out,
mm-hmm. right?
So, and I think that's one of the things is like, I think every generation kind of like shits on the younger generation.
Yep.
You know,
it's kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like a rite of passage almost.
But then it is, but this is the thing is the real way it should be is that the older generation should be there not to dictate to the younger generation, but to guide them in the right manner of what they might be missing, you know. Yeah, you can't.
That's exactly how I feel about Star Trek fandom, and it's so fractured.
Oh yeah. Star Trek fandom is a.
That's basically my pitch when people are like, "Oh, mess. They like JJ." I'm like, take them and show them the good stuff too.
Yeah.
Right.
There's more. Don't just
dismiss them if they like it.
Yeah, yeah, like don't just shit on what they like. That's not going to attract them at all.
Yeah,
you're gonna get people call people like old primers, like
old right. primers. Oh my god,
primers! It's just like no, it's Star Trek.
Yeah, and so I mean that's for the Star Trek fandom, that's for sure. But yeah, so that's the one thing is I came away with is that that the older generation, younger generation relationship. The other thing was I did kind of like the idea, and we were talking about it a second ago, is how Kor, when he took on the 10 ships, and they just couldn't believe I don't know if I told you this story before, or maybe I had, but I, you know, years ago I was working with this older guy, and we were building something, and he just the way he would just do things and make it look so simple. Mm-hmm. And then like I would try it and be like just a huge mess. And he'd be like, get out of here. Just leave. Just stop. And like, and then he would do it. And you just, so it's, and it's weird, you know, cause you get to the, like somebody's done something is so often and so well. And then you're amazed at how well they did it, you know, like, cause they've mastered that craft or that skill or whatever that might be. So it's pretty, it's always amazing. If you know someone who's older and is good at something, just watch what they do. It's just, it's incredible. I mean, you know, listen to what they have to say about whatever craft or skill they have, but also, you know, ask questions, but not annoying questions, you know, kind of like watch their techniques and stuff like that. Cause it's really amazing when you can pick up somebody who's really good at it. And it's, I think a lot of times, older people get to like, kind of like push the side because they're not as like, maybe not as, I want to say energetic, but they just don't have the flamboyant panache of maybe a young person. But I think like,
The older you get, the less you want to put up with other people's crap.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Before you'd be like, you'd listen to it like, okay, let's hear it. Now you're just like, I just don't have time. You're like, my time on Earth is short. Make it quick. Yeah. Last, the idea too, I'm still grappling with this. I'm not quite sure what are the legend and the man idea. I wonder if there's a middle road. Because, you know, we put people at this legend thing, but we, the more you find out about certain people, like whoever you might idolize or think are awesome, when you read their, you know, like, or find out about their personal history, you find out they're very flawed people. And they did some terrible things or made some terrible choices in their lives. And then you're like, well, but I love them for these certain things. We've elevated this person for whatever reason, for, you know, because they're good at one thing or they've climbed the ladder to get to a certain level. But we made them into a legend, but there's still a lot of bad stuff underneath that we don't
know. I don't know. I don't know if there is a middle ground, because it's like there's the Disney movie and then there's the actual facts. It's like one's the legend, one's the idealized version, and then this is like the real version. Whether it doesn't matter if it's about real things or if they're adaptions of fiction. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the real thing is like gritty and awful and terrible, and then, you know, the Disney, it's cute, cuddly, and whatever. It's like the most idealized version, you know, from, you know, stuff like Hunchback of Notre Dame to, you know, Pocahontas, different things that, you know, Pocahontas is a real person, John Smith is a real person. Beyond getting the story wrong, they're idealized and totally different than the actual historical characters.
Well, and in some cases, like, is it about what they did to get to that point? Like, were they taking advantage of people throughout the course of the career, or did they make some stupid younger mistakes that they've atoned for and spent their life trying to make right? I think there's a difference, but, you know, between,
I don't know,
stupid mistakes
are one thing, but like, okay, let's just take a celebrity like David Bowie. Okay. So obviously no one can argue that the guy wasn't, you know, he was just very talented, iconic, legendary, you know, like, but I mean, the man wasn't an angel either at the same time. And he, you know, stepped on a lot of people's, you know, toes and did some nasty things at certain points in his life. And it's like, if you just take the legend as itself, or do you really like read into everything the man did, you know, like, and just like things like that. Like, that's my thing, is like, maybe the legend's awesome for getting you inspired to be the next David Bowie or whatever you want to be in life, or whatever, you know, whoever you think is awesome. But you know, when you really uncover everything, you know, you find out, well, you know, like, you know, JFK's womanizing and stuff like that, you know, just stuff like that. I don't know. It's like, we elevate people, but then we find out that they're not all there, you know, like everything.
Yeah. But, you know, just because people are terrible and just because there's a legend about them doesn't mean they're mutually exclusive. There is some crossover. You know, sure, these people are legends because they did great things, but they're also terrible people. And so, like, you know, in a way, it's like they're both true. And so I don't know how you can make a middle ground out of that, because people do terrible things. But these people are also idolized because they've done great things or things that are popular.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know how to get a middle ground out of that. It's like a little bit of both.
Well, it's hard. It's just like loving a TV show and acknowledging that it has problems.
Like Star Trek.
Like Star Trek, you know? I mean, watching the original series, it did some really great things, but it's also pretty terribly misogynistic. and so you have that. And it's so being able to see things through a modern lens and under, you know, it's hard. You can still love something and acknowledge the problems in it.
I guess I agree with that. Yeah, I mean,
for sure.
And I think that goes with anything in life, that you can see the, you know, everything for all it is and all it isn't, and still enjoy it and still appreciate it. It's just that, you know, like, you know, the Worf's thing is, either he's the man or he's a legend, you know, or hero.
And maybe the middle ground is both, because the legend, the legend will inspire you, if you like the legend. The legend may or may, depending on what kind of person you are, would inspire you to find out the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what they were debating. And then Worf is like, you know, do you want to believe one way or the other? But yeah, I mean, like, you know, you like David Bowie, he's like, oh, this legend. So you dive into his past, you listen to podcasts to talk about his past and his life, read books, you know, articles, interviews. And so the legend inspires you to find out about the real man.
The legend is the admission ticket to get you into it, into the club.
Sure. And then, yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
And then, you know, you can get the deep cuts by going into.
So it's like Scientology. So you hold the cans, and then once you pay all the money, you start to find out.
Why not?
Zanu.
Zanu is right. So that's the one thing. Besides the. You know, core and is becoming older, and the tragedy of becoming old and not being maybe treated as well was the legend thing, and the man thing was I kind of kept bouncing that like a ping pong in my in my head. So
beautiful, absolutely beautiful episode. Performances are amazing all around.
Yeah,
this was the actor who played Corey. I don't remember his name off the top of my head. This was his last performance ever before he passed away, unfortunately.
Yeah,
John Colicos.
Yeah,
Colicos.
Yeah. Colicos. Yeah, yeah. And obviously, he was in the original series.
Core.
Bunch of other stuff too, as well. So
yeah, and it's just amazing all around acting between Michael Dorn, him, and JG. It was just
it's great.
Beautiful stuff, beautiful story. This is what Star Trek is about, really.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it you know, gives you fodder for thought later on.
Oh, for absolutely for sure.
You know, and it should too. So
love it. Tell the truth.
So one of the things I didn't get to mention earlier, because this is a very Klingon-centric episode, Duolingo, a web app for your phones. I don't know if it's on the internet too, if you can just do it on the internet, but I know you can do it on your phone or your tablet. They're coming out later this month with like an introductory version for Klingon. And I posted this like 2 years ago when it was first announced through our Facebook group, and I cannot wait to try this out. Because I really want to get
it's finally coming to fruition.
Wow.
I actually know the guys working on it.
Wow.
They're very excited. It's definitely been in beta testing. So advanced speakers have been going through it, looking for errors. They're planning on doing sort of a multi sort of tiered release to it. So they'll get stuff out in time, I think, for discovery. And then they'll be adding to it over time. It's an all-volunteer operation. I mean,
the people working on it, they all have day jobs and stuff and lives.
right. And
Felix is in school was in school. So, I mean, they're all doing this in their, you know, small amount of spare time. And they've definitely been putting in a lot more effort to and been working to get it done in time for Discovery, because the Klingon in Discovery is accurate.
Wow.
I knew the person who has been doing the translations and has been working on it. And they have she's also been working with the coach the speaking coach who's been working directly with the actors. The actors are super into it. I think Mary Chifo, who's playing Laurel, mm-hmm. that's how you say her name. She I think at one point she tweeted a dog-eared copy of her picture of her
I saw that. Yeah,
they're super into it. It's pretty exciting, and they've really embraced the fans, and so I'm really looking forward to hearing the language. It's funny because the language in Deep Space Nine was so throwaway for much of Deep Space Nine, and you know, a lot of people give Enterprise a lot of crap. But I was actually watching, I just finished watching all of Enterprise recently.
Yeah.
And there was an episode where the Klingons had boarded Enterprise, and they're shooting at people and they're shooting in hallways. And one of them yells, "Julia Cher." And I went and I looked up from what I was doing, and I was like, "Oh my God, he just said return to the transporter." I understood what he said. And I got super stoked because I was like, awesome. That was actually Klingon.
Wow.
And I understood it. Yay! It pays off.
That's great.
That's what I want to do. That's why I'm excited about the Duolingo app. I want to be able to understand the Klingon and not just read the subtitles. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Process. You really, I mean, I've been immersed in the language and working with the language for the better part of definitely for 3 years now, but really in some capacity for the last seven. Mm-hmm. And it is hard. It was done on purpose. It was a purposefully difficult language. Wow. To learn. The grammar structure is crazy, and the grammar rules are crazy, and the pronunciation is also supposed to be, it was made so that actors could do it with fake teeth in, but it's also very difficult. It is not an easy language to speak. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing these actors who seem to they seem to be excited about it. The TV show, they have said that when the Klingons are on their ship, they're speaking Klingon. If they're on Kronosh, they're speaking Klingon.
Yeah.
Everything that they are doing is going to be done in Klingon unless there's a universal translator or whatever involved, and they're with the Federation. So I think that is so rad.
That's really exciting. I love the sound of the Klingon language.
Using it. It's like you created this language. And I feel like in this, especially now when we've had, you know, Avatar and Na'vi, and we have Dothraki from Game of Thrones, people expect that. And the reason that people expect it is because, in large part, because of the legacy of Klingon.
Yeah.
And what Paramount and CBS did with the Klingon language for the movies. And the fact that they had these TV shows and then didn't use it.
So you know, it's funny that you say it, because I always assume almost every time I heard Klingon, especially in Deep Space Nine, Next Generation and stuff like that, I thought that it was the real Klingon, because growing up, I had, you know, when the book came out, the Klingon dictionary, you know, sure, we all tried it. Not everyone was good at it. Me in particular, but you kind of just assume now they got this pretty much language mapped out. They can just use it all the time. You know, they don't have to make up crazy sounding words. And you telling me that this episode, there was just lots of stuff that just kind of just doesn't mean anything.
It's heartbreaking in a lot of ways. your company invested money in that.
Yeah.
You have a linguist. You should be able to just call.
I mean, it's like they cheaped out.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, it's like they just cheaped out and they didn't want to spend the money to have it done or whatever. And I mean, it's such a bummer. So I'm really excited that they seem to really care about that aspect coming up with Discovery. I'm really looking forward to that.
So. Me and Dave are definitely looking forward to Discovery. What do you feel about these new looks for the Klingons? Do you have any feeling about it either way?
You know what? I really don't. I think the costumes are just gorgeous.
They look cool.
I come from a theater background, and so as an actor, when I see something like that, I just am like, I want to wear that.
Oh, yeah. Those look amazing.
You see that, and you just, like, you want to wear it. And it's kind of interesting to me in a way. I mean, like I said, I just finished watching Enterprise, so they had that episode in season 4 that was kind of like, look, this is why there are some smooth-headed Klingons that exist out there. Like, they finally, like, put out an explanation, and I was like, okay, I buy that.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. It works for me. It also explains why there's some who are and some who aren't.
Right.
And I always kind of figured also, it's like, you have people all over the world that don't look the same, there are certain traits in certain parts of the world that, you know, we don't all look the same. So to me, it stands to reason that there are going to be Klingons who look potentially completely different than the Klingons we've come to know at this point. That's because they come from a whole other continent. I don't look like somebody from China at all.
Right.
So it stands to reason that we would have potentially different hair colors, different hairstyles, different outfits, if you look at the world we live in, that is what we live with. We have different, races of people, we have differences, cultural differences. The way we dress is different. The way we speak and our language is slightly different. We have all of these differences. So to me, I guess maybe because I'm a noob in a lot of ways, I've really only been kind of hardcore about it for the last 5 to 6 years. Maybe I'm just more forgiving.
Yeah. I think you have to be forgiving, because you have to realize the shows when they took place and everything that happened, they have budgets. They can only do so much,
Exactly. So I think it's cool. I think in a lot of ways it certainly makes sense to me. I'm willing to give it a try because, oh my gosh, stop complaining, people. We're getting new Star Trek.
Exactly. That's my thing. Like, it's more Star Trek.
We're finally getting a new Star Trek series.
After 12 years of nothing, but three movies. I mean, movies are fine, but movies is never where Star Trek has truly shined.
Yeah.
And the movies were technically rehashing old characters. We're getting new Star Trek.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
New.
Yeah.
New. So. Finally. I mean, I love the way the Klingons' faces and their ridges, and you see their ears, and their ears are super alien. The only thing that irks me a little bit about the Klingons, none of them have had any hair, facial or otherwise. And I'm like,
yeah, that we've seen. Although neither did Chang.
Chang had a itty bitty ponytail and he had facial hair.
Did he have a little ponytail in the back? I thought his ridge went like almost all the way up. I thought he was basically bald.
He had like itty bitty ponytail, like a little British ponytail, and he had facial hair.
Sure,
I don't think I've actually seen a backside of a Klingon at this point. Have we actually seen an image of them from behind? So I mean, I honestly I have no idea what's back there.
Well, the leaked image, like the first image of Klingons that ever came out, they're all bald.
Okay,
on the back.
All right.
But that was a super grainy, poor looking picture. One of the things I hope, I want to see a smooth headed Klingon interacting with ridged Klingons. So that would be amazing. I got my fingers crossed.
I mean, there was definitely a stigma there, even when they were trying to cure the
Klingon virus. Augment virus, yeah.
I mean, they were going to blow that planet up, which is such a Klingon thing to do. They were just going to be like, we're just going to blow them up and let it, you know, and that'll deal with it.
That'll be fine.
That's fine. Don't worry about it.
And then, you know, the humans went, oh, we're going to do biological warfare. You've got the disease now.
Yeah.
It's strange, though, growing up before, obviously, Enterprise ever was, it was, I think, Next Generation was the only show that was on at the time. There was a game, a FASA game that was based on Star Trek, and their explanation is that the Klingons splice genes to make people look more human or more Romulan, and just so they would interact and they can covert and get into
you like spies.
Yeah, being spies.
That's a really good explanation.
It was
too.
A good explanation. I was like, oh, that makes sense, you know. But then that was just written for the game, and then it just disappeared. So it never came into anything. But in the end, it's television. You know, original series had tons of flaws. It only had 3 seasons. They were just making up as they go. Obviously, you know, they didn't have it all worked out. And by the time we got to the movies with Christopher Lloyd, you know, making that Klingon role, I mean, that's really all when it all came together. So,
yeah.
Anyways, Klingons are wonderful and confounding creatures. We love them. And sometimes we just scratch our heads like, what the hell?
Yeah. Oh, and I think going back to what we were saying earlier about this episode, you know, a lot of times back when we did our Klingon series, where it's like, you know, the more as time went on, Klingons got dumber and dumber.
They did.
And this is an episode that kind of brings back like the good heyday of Klingons.
Yes.
We get intelligent Klingons.
Yeah.
You know, Martok super intelligent, Worf super intelligent.
Right.
I mean, Worf was all, but I mean, like, just in general, in Next Gen on, like, the Klingons are just like dumb headbangers. And, like, you know, headbanging is fine. It's just, like, that thing on our ship, Enterprise must have put it there, so we're going to fight the Enterprise. Like, Riker's the first officer on the Klingon ship.
Yeah,
they're just like, what? Yeah. Like, it's like the dumbest logic I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Post hoc ergo proctor hoc, have you heard of this, Mr. Klingon Captain?
And, you know, like we said, they do seem to, like, their intelligence seems to slide off more and more because they just become more and more warrior, and they lose a little bit of the, you know, the cunningness. You know, they're just more just like, let's just.
Yeah. But Kor was the cunning Klingon back in TOS.
Oh, yeah, he was.
So whenever we get those, you know, comebacks from the TOS original trio, those are always good Klingon episodes.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So, wrapping up, where can we find you, Jin, on social media?
You can find me at KlingonPopWarrior.com. We'll give you links. I'm also on Facebook, Facebook.com/KlingonPopWarrior. If you Google the Klingon Pop Warrior, you're going to find me. you can find me, you can look up Klingon Pop Warrior on Amazon, iTunes, Google or Google Play or Bandcamp. Like, you will find me. I am there. And it has been a really fun ride singing these songs. And
it's got to be hilarious and fun at the same time, just like challenging and all everything. Just like,
I've been having a blast performing at conventions. I don't know when this is going to air, My next convention is in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm going to be at Wizard World Madison on Sunday. I don't quite know the time yet, but I will be there.
What's
and
the
then
date? This coming Sunday?
September 24th.
Okay.
And then I will be around the Chicago area. I'm actually doing Extra Life Day. So I'm raising money for Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. And on November 4th, I will be live streaming on Twitch for 24 hours.
Wow.
If you donate to my campaign, keep an eye on my social media. I'm actually doing things like little giveaways and stuff like that with for donations. So if people kind of keep an eye on it, they, you know, might be able to get into a little drawing for something or I've got a bunch of little jewelry and some Star Trek actor autographs and stuff like that. Yeah. So
feel free to throw that on our Facebook group too when you're getting close to the Extra Life thing.
Sure. Yeah, I've already started. Actually, this was really cool. I couldn't believe it. Somebody had told Kenneth Mitchell, who's playing Cole in the upcoming Star Trek Discovery, that I was doing this, and he actually donated to my Extra Life campaign.
Oh, that is amazing.
Awesome.
Right? I just thought that was so cool. So, yeah, I can't be more impressed with the Discovery cast at this point. Like, what a class act and an honorable Klingon warrior.
Oh, good. Good to
so,
know.
So, yeah, it's really fun. I'm trying to raise $1,000. I'm up to 300 right now. So I'm trying to raise 1,000 by November 4th. If I hit 800 before the day, my guitar player is going to come over during the live stream, and we're actually going to do a concert on the live stream. That's so
awesome. That would be awesome. Yeah. So, yeah. Any of your links, feel free to share them on the group. We love creative people who do creative things, especially when they're Star Trek related. So definitely feel free to put anything, your con pictures, the cosplay, Klingon Pop Warrior, anything you want to put, your Extra Life thing, share it all. I'm happy to help with anything we can do.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'll also be at WindyCon here in Chicago in November. That's in mid-November. And then I'll be at Starbase Indy in Indianapolis, which is right after Thanksgiving. So
sweet.
Awesome.
Really nice.
Awesome. Yeah, my November is very busy.
So. Yeah, like when we were messaging, it's like, oh, I'm not, you're going to be busy for a while. I'm like, okay, let's do it this week. It was an awesome, fast turnaround.
Yeah, no, that was great. Especially that we could, you know, get you in with your busy schedule. So thanks for coming on and talking.
Yeah, absolutely. This was really fun. I love this episode, and I was really excited to get
sorry,
to talk.
Sorry, we made inappropriate jokes
about
the
Alamo.
Sorry.
Don't
hate us.
Don't sully the bromance.
Don't hate us.
We have sullied it so much. You have no idea.
Don't hate us. Let's see. Our intro is provided by Dave Wilkes. The rest of our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find the show on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo, on Facebook at facebook.com/group/synthaholics. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. We haven't gotten an email in a while. We like to read those on the air. You can also send us audio log that we can read or just play on the air, and we can respond to you verbally.
Absolutely. If you have the chance, definitely go onto iTunes, rate and review us, preferably 5 stars and a nice shining review about what you think about the show. If you have a little extra change in your pocket, we would love to have that. We have a Patreon set up, and if you go on our site, click on our Patreon, $1 a month. What's that? $1 a month. You spend more on that on fast
Starbucks.
Starbucks and fast food. So definitely, if you could throw it our way, we'd definitely appreate it.
Personally, I'm David_J_Duncan on Twitter and on Instagram. And Instagram, mostly I put up pictures of liquors I make.
I'm at Blackbird2004.
And Guy, our co-host that definitely shows up every now and then, is at the GS Davis Art.
And we are at Synthaholic Duel on Twitter as well.
Yes. Tweeted us. We like tweeting.
Yes, absolutely.
Aaron is up at all times. So am I. I work till 2:30 in the morning.
I just wake up periodically and check Twitter.
Twitter is like,
and I'll be twittering. Like, I'll be like, I can't sleep. Twitter.
I'm really bad. I'm pretty bad. I really like Twitter, but my Twitter account, even though it's I've got the Klingon Pop on there, it's definitely a more personal Twitter account. I keep my Facebook page pretty like to Klingon things and Star Trek things and my upcoming performances and pictures from cons and stuff like that. But my Twitter feed, like, I will get political. Like, yeah. if you know.
If you don't like my politics, maybe you should just make one for just, you know, for your Klingon stuff and, you know.
You know, I've thought about it, but it's more fun to just mix it all up. And they're like, why is the Klingon Pop Warrior chick angry about, you know.
Somalia.
do you ever tweet in Klingon?
You know, I do sometimes.
Yeah.
I'll respond to things. I use TweetDeck, and so I actually have some like saved searches that I have.
Awesome.
Running, you know, like running, and so like I kind of keep my eye on. I have one for just Klingon, mm-hmm. Which there's all kinds of crap that goes through there, but sometimes there's some really funny things, and I've managed to like interject myself into conversations on occasion that have gotten some good laughs.
That's awesome.
I actually recently somebody was complaining about it was something they were blaming something on the Klingons But it was some sort of politics thing. And I was just like, that's not, if you, and this guy was basically like, I speak Klingon and that sounds like Klingon to me. And they were, and I was like, if you spoke Klingon, you'd know that's not Klingon at all. That's some Ferengi nonsense. If ever I saw that. And so I just kind of like interjected myself into this conversation. And I didn't realize that the person who started, who originated the thread was actually a pretty big, like, it was actually a pretty big somebody with a lot of followers. Wow. And I started getting a ton of likes on it.
That's awesome.
Wow. That's awesome.
And they were like, and then somebody else said it was like, when a Klingon understands current politics more than our actual politicians. And I was like, you know what? It's all universal across any quadrant. Like,
that's awesome. Oh, my God.
That is for sure. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you so much, Jen, for taking the time to come and chat with us tonight about what you do, the amazing things that you do, and this amazing episode of Star Trek. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was wonderful having you. And keep up doing everything that you're doing, because it's pretty, pretty amazing.
Thanks, guys. I have a good time. So I'll do it as long as I can.
Awesome.
That's what we do, too.
Yes, we do it as long as we can.
As long as we can.
Well, thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Ooh, that was fun.
Yeah, so we'll be out on Tuesday.
Yeah, we put stuff out on Tuesdays. That's pretty fun.
Cool.
I did college theater back, actually when I was in high school, and I wanted to say this earlier, but I'm like, that's not really pertaining to our episode. So you were saying how like you were really emotive and had to do a lot of things with your hands. My first play was Romeo and Juliet. And I was Paris, and apparently I was too emotive with my hands. So, like, the director had the costume department whip me up a cape to keep draped over one arm.
Wow. So, like, we're gonna
keep you from at least not moving that hand.
there was something I was watching where it was like the whole joke of it was this person kept flailing all over the place, and they were like, just stand still. I think it was like a British comedy show or something like that. And the guy was supposed to be like a historian talking about some battle on a field, and they were like, maybe just take your gestures back a little bit. And he's like, okay. And then they'd start back up again. And he was just like, he was just like waving his arms in the air like a crazy person. Wow. And they were like, okay, maybe just hold that arm down here.
Put your hands in your pocket.
The hard thing to do is, like, how far do you actually ham it up or act it up or whatever in certain instances, you know, like, and what's acceptable and what's not? I'm not an actor.
I just always imagine Shakespeare being really, like, expressive with your arms. So I was just like, yeah.
How about expressive with your legs?
Well, I got to be expressive. I also played Charles the Wrestler in one of the Shakespeare plays, and it was really funny because we do all our stuff in period, but like our fighting coordinator was doing it more like modern wrestling.
Okay.
And so like the first night of the show, like we had people like really into it.
Wow.
Cuz like I put the guy into a headlock, and then the way like he finishes me is he like basically body slams me. And you know, the way theater combat works or any like pro wrestling works is that the person doing it, the person getting hurt, is the person who pretty much initiates the action. So like the guy I'm fighting is like taller than me, so that's like an issue. So it's like I'm like headlocking him, then I have to jump over him as he like touches the back of my head.
Yeah.
So I jump over him, and then like you spread out and smack the floor, so you make this horrible, horrible noise.
Wow!
And then like the first time, the crowd went wild because I guess they were into modern wrestling.
Right.
But the other two nights, I guess people weren't into it, the wrestling, so like we didn't get any big cheers, and I was like kind of sad. But I love doing stage combat if I ever got to.
There's some good stage combat in A Klingon Christmas Carol. I know A Klingon Christmas Carol is coming to – it's going to be in Chicago again this year.